and welcome to Book Talk from Scottish Book Trust. I'm Paul Gallagher, and this month on Book Talk, I'm joined by book critic and blogger Nicola Balkind and Scottish Book Trust's Head of Reader Development, Philippa Cochran. Hello, both of you.
Hello.
Hello.
The book we're going to be discussing is The 100-Year-Old Man Who Climbed Out of the Window and Disappeared by Jonas Jonasson. It's not a title that rolls off the tongue, but it's a book that's been flying off the shelves since its original publication in Sweden in 2010 and in the UK in translation in 2012. It's now sold upwards of 3 million copies worldwide and is still to be found bothering the upper regions of the bestseller charts in most bookshops. The book tells what I think can be rightly called a tall story about Allan Carlson, the aged man of the title, who escapes on the eve of his 100th birthday from his old people's home. After a short shuffle to the local bus stop, it's not long before Allan gets caught up in a whole bunch of hijinks involving drug dealers, a suitcase full of stolen money, and at one point a large elephant. While this story is unfolding, Jonasson also introduces a flashback element to the story, with alternating chapters taking us back through the previous century of Allan's life, revealing how this unassuming old man has in fact been present at some of the most significant and troubling events of the 20th century. So before we get into the discussion, I like to gather opinions from our Twitter followers on the books we discuss, and it got such an interesting variety for this book that I thought it would be a good point to start by reading a few and then handing over to my guests for some responses. So here's a few of the things that followers on Scottish BK Trust, our Twitter account, had to say about The 100-Year-Old Man. So the writer's muse said, "Great book, lovely characters, and a satisfying ending." So a very happy reader there. Completely opposite response from Literacy Advisor, who said, "Not many books I start and give up on. This was one of them." Then, with a slightly different perspective, Sarah McPee said, "Loved the black humour, made me want to embark on my own vodka-fueled adventure." And sort of in a similar vein, Hilary Petrie said, "Loved it. Reminded me in some ways of Ian Banks's Wasp Factory, with laughing at things you maybe shouldn't laugh at." So quite a lot of different points in there. We'll come back to things about the humour. We'll talk about the humour a bit later. But those first two very different comments, Nicola, about the person who loved it, found it really satisfying, and then the person who gave up halfway through. I found that that was kind of representative of two positions that came through from quite a lot of responses on Twitter. So, Nicola, is this a book that readers are basically going to love or hate?
It definitely seems that way. I actually started reading it and gave up on it before I was invited to come and talk about it here, and then picked it up again. And I also lent it to my parents, and they loved it. So I've definitely been seeing that response, like, just through Goodreads and Twitter and kind of talking to people who've read it and that sort of thing. It definitely seems to really grind people's gears or just make them laugh.
So you initially stopped reading. I mean, what was it about it that didn't, what didn't grab you about it?
For me, the humour just seemed very simple. And it actually reminded me a lot of the Cloud Atlas story, which has Timothy Cavendish, and he's a man who is kind of entrapped into being in an old folks home. And that was very comical and had this very kind of silly humour to it. But it was also kind of scary to think, like, what if you really were trapped in an old person's home and people think that you're crazy and you're trying to escape and you think you're being really reasonable, and then it turns out that they don't believe you, and then there's like a great escape sort of thing in that as well. So I think part of it was that it was very similar, and so that was what put me off The 100-Year-Old Man, was that it didn't really grab me in the same way, and I didn't think the humour was as well drawn.
Right.
So I think that was kind of what put me off initially, and it was just kind of, it was more of a crime caper at the beginning, which isn't necessarily the sort of thing I read, so.
Mm. So Philippa, come to you. Mm-hmm. How does your response compare? Obviously, Nicola, not so impressed. And what we were saying about this kind of love or hate thing, can you see that in the book? Can you see why it might provoke that kind of response?
I can definitely see why it would provoke that kind of response. I helpfully sit somewhere in the middle. But I sit somewhere in the middle, I think, for the reasons that probably polarise people. So I enjoyed reading it, and I found it easy to read and very fable-like, and if you just take it on the surface level, you kind of romp through it and laugh where you're meant to laugh, and everybody's happy, and you go home. I think there are more complex and perhaps troubling aspects to the book, and I think they don't sit very easily with that sort of lighter surface element of it, which is why I'm sort of I don't know what I think, to be honest with you. But I can see, I can definitely see from those reasons why people might go, ah, it's great, or, oh no, I'm just going to throw it out a window and not like the old man, and it will just disappear. Yeah.
It's interesting that you're sort of commenting on a sort of darker element to it, because it seems from the responses that we got that a lot of people don't pick up on that or are not really bothered if that's the case, because so many people's responses was, loved it, really fun, lovely characters, really great. So we'll come on to the dark thing in a minute, but just to sort of talk a bit more about the book in general and what it's like throughout it. I talked obviously in the intro about the historical aspect, and some people have sort of talked about this as quite a gimmicky element to the book. Nicola, what the, like, where was the emphasis for you in the book? Was this present day storyline, this kind of heist story, was that what it was about? Was that compelling? Or was it really an excuse to kind of put this character in lots of historical events more than tell the present day story?
Yeah, I think at the beginning it's definitely the kind of heist runaway sort of thing, and a lot more of it is focused on that. But as you progress through the book, the chapters that take on the past get longer and longer and longer, and it got to a point where I was like, is this never going to end? Is he like, how many world events does he have to be part of? It was quite kind of Forrest Gump in the same sort of way, right, that Forrest Gump is a little bit gimmicky, but I think that that had a lot more fun with it, because it was like, you know, stuff like him getting his finger caught in his fly when he's supposed to be shaking hands with the president. But with this, it was like he's helping the president
create the atomic bomb.
Exactly. Like, yeah, he's like, you know, he's helping all these world leaders do horrendous things. Mm-hmm. And we're supposed to just be like, oh, you, oh, Alan, you're such a silly man. Like, it didn't connect for me at all. And I think the further that got into that kind of looking at history thing, it just didn't really seem to have a point. It was like, all this horrendous stuff happened, but hey, it happened in a funny way. Like, Kim Jong-il has a tantrum. Like, it was just, it seemed very easy. It was kind of poking fun at all the easiest targets. And that just didn't really come off for me. And there were a lot of parts where I didn't understand why I was getting so much extra information on things until they came back later on. I felt like the character didn't even end up having a personality, because every conversation that he has, it's like paraphrased and it's very oblique, and it's like, oh, hello, sir. Oh, hi, how are you? And it's just like, yeah, every line he spoke, there were 10 more that he didn't really speak, but it was like, well, don't you think this? Well, don't you think that? It was just very jokey.
Okay, so there's a couple of points there that I think are really interesting. The first thing that I want to pick up on is what you were saying there about there's a lot of the dialogue in the book is reported speech rather than actual dialogue. So, Philippa, what does that do you think, to our reading of it? There's virtually all the significant conversations in the book, there isn't actual dialogue, and I think that's the point Nicola was getting at, that it's very much described, he said this and he said that and they talked about this. Why is the author doing that, do you think?
I think there's an awful lot of this book that is about trying to put distance between events and the choices that the people who have caused those events make, and the character of Alan, and thus also the reader. I think it's all about creating distance. Mm. And I think it's being done, this is where I get into troubled water with this book. I think it's done to make it much lighter, and that you can just read it in this sort of, it's really silly and someone else has died. Yeah, how marvelous, right. sort of a way. But I think it's also about commenting on Alan's whole approach to life, which is this thing that he got from his mum about essentially what will be.
Yeah. Things are what they are, and mm-hmm. whatever will be. It's the other point that I was going to pick up on. Nicola said there didn't seem to be much point to the book, and I felt like, is this supposed to be the point? Things are what they are, and whatever will be? Is that...
I've been thinking about this since I finished reading this book, which was only 2 days ago, so I've not been thinking about it too much, but I have been thinking about it a lot, and I can't make up my mind whether it's just, this is the style of novel this is, and actually things are just what they are, and just take them at face value, because that's how we should just take them, and that's just the way it is, or whether it's by asking us to do that about the creation of the atomic bomb, about neutering of undesirable people in Sweden pre the Second World War, about the gulags in the USSR. I mean, all of these things that are horrific.
When you just put it out there like that, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
That's not funny.
It's not funny. It's not. It is just not funny. And I wonder if by putting distance on it, he's actually trying to almost hold up more and go, look, you can tell, you can construct a narrative about all of this. And I'm constructing a ridiculous narrative to suggest how all of these things happened. Mm. And by constructing a ridiculous narrative about it, he's flagging up how ridiculous it is that human beings do these things to one another. But I wonder, I have to admit, then I sort of think, you're just overthinking this. Trying to find some sense and moral core to the book, and perhaps right. It's just not there.
That's what I feel. I think it manages to avoid actual ethics and actually having a discussion about these things by putting that distance there, and like somehow makes like all this death and destruction seem absolutely trivial, and quite often takes like a good run up to it. Like there's a bit where there's a bit about a suicide bomber, and you're thinking, is this for real? There's actually going to be a suicide bomber? And then like manages to end it in comedy. And I think that it's a dark comedy that's actually pretending to be dark, because in a lot of ways the humour was really quite conservative, and it was like, oh, she was swearing, ooh, she seems feisty, and just that sort of thing, where it managed to be completely inoffensive, and to me that made it quite boring.
Or is it about a cultural norm in Sweden that we are perhaps not obviously appreciating, because we're not in touch with it?
This is a novel in translation, which is something that I was going to ask as well. Like, did that thought cross your mind? Well, just continue that thought, really, that you were going with. And
I have to say that is the first time that thought has occurred to me. But that whole thing about how it is, how being polite in society works in Sweden, and the thing about women swearing or not swearing, and the point where they're all pretending to be lovely, God-fearing Christians who read the Bible, and suddenly they all change their behavior dramatically so that people buy that story, or at least one person buys that story.
And the way Alan refers to everyone when he meets them,
yes,
Mr. Chairman,
exactly,
or Mr. But it almost feels to me that feels like a kind of underhanded, like disrespect,
yeah,
almost.
Yeah.
And so it's like the author is kind of making the character, he's using that Swedish sort of character type to then undercut the authority of these kind of despots and dictators.
I think it's also about expectations that he sets up for that character to start with, i.e., you know, Alan comes from a family that has nothing, and a family where, you know, his dad runs away to join the revolution in Russia. That doesn't quite go according to plan. But, you know, it's I think it's also slightly about people of a sort of working class background and how they subvert, or he can subvert, people who place themselves in positions of power and demand respect, and the wife of the Chinese leader who's up against Mao.
Yes.
But the way that she conducts herself as being someone who's very important and therefore should be listened to, and everyone should do what she says, I think it's there's a constant stabbing of little almost, you know, sharp pointy sticks at those people.
Yeah, and I think like the question is whether that is sufficient, if you like, because if that's really what it's about, to me, I haven't really given much of my opinion on this, but I got to say that I'm more in the didn't really like it camp, because there doesn't seem to be that much going on here, even though I think it's possible to ask these big questions of it, like you are, Philippa. I'm not sure that there's a lot of sophistication to this writing, and perhaps, you know, you could say to me, that's not what it's about, Paul. It's about poking fun at people in authority, and it's about sort of having a farcical story that can also be, you know, make a kind of observation on our culture and things like that. But I felt so much like, what is really being invested in here? You know, there's 400 pages worth of novel here, and there's a whole lot of nothing going on.
And I think that kind of punching up thing as well, like the author totally has his cake and eats it too, with the whole like, oh, Alan's doing all this political stuff. Look how Alan knows Mao and Truman and everyone in the world who's in power at that point. But then at the same time, he's like, oh yeah, I don't really like politics or religion. So yeah, so there's this whole sprawling section where it's all about religion, and there's this Catholic missionary who's in Iran trying to like convert people. It just got completely thrown away after that point. And I think the way that it's written, I think that it's at once familiar and exotic, because it is kind of like a droll, kind of glib humour that it has. And so like it could almost be set in like the middle of England. Like it almost reminded me of that Ben Wheatley film Sightseers, where it's like a couple of campers who turned into serial killers, and you're totally allowed to laugh at them. And I think that's the thing, is that all these political leaders, you can just poke fun at them and be like, haha, well, you lost in the end, so your ego can...
Yeah, I actually wrote down for myself, because I don't know the answer to the question, is it satire? Is it meant to be satire? Or is it not? And I really don't know.
I don't know either. I think it's... and I think maybe the people who kind of read it and loved it would maybe say, just like you said earlier, you're overthinking it. It's just... It's funny because it's funny. And if you don't think it's funny, then I guess it's not for you, type thing. But something that you said, that you were telling the story about the priest, the missionary character, and how that story just ends. The amount of death in the book, not to get too heavy, but it really is such a present thing. And there's so many characters in the story who are just offed with the kind of littlest respect to, no matter how much they've been invested in, and no matter how much Alan has got to know them, they get killed brutally, and he has no emotional response at all. We talked about this a little bit before recording, Philippa, and that for me was the hardest thing to take about the book. Like, I did find some of it quite entertaining and funny, and some of the sort of farcical scenes with world leaders, I thought it was good. Some of the historical stuff was really good, and I really quite enjoyed it. But then it would hit me with a kind of really brutal, and as far as I could see, unnecessary. But is it unnecessary? Are these deaths and the sort of insignificance of them, is that a comment, Philippa? Do you think that's a comment on something?
I do. Interestingly, I was talking to someone else about this today, about this book, because as you know, Paul, I as I said before, read a huge amount of crime fiction. So I read about people being killed in horrible ways on a very regular basis, and I'm not squeamish and I'm not moralistic about this stuff, and yet this book, that was one of the pervading things that I came away with, was wow, that, you know, as you say, people were killed with very little regard and very little marking of the fact that somebody has just died.
I mean, all that you're saying, that all kind of fits with this, things are what they are and whatever will be, will be. And in a way, you could take the book as a kind of provocation to say, you should really care more about the amount of death in the world. And the author may well be telling this story partly to sort of show that, like, you don't care, you know. And but then on the other hand, it may be, as the wonderfully named Twitter user Nick Troptopoulos said, that it's just a fun send-up of Scandi crime. So, like, kind of Jo Nesbø and I guess Stieg Larsson type thing, just the kind of brutality and easy deaths of all these people, that, like, that's kind of partly what it is as well. Okay, we're going to leave it there. We've talked about an awful lot, so we'd love to hear your comments if you've read The 100-Year-Old Man Who Climbed Out of the Window and Disappeared. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook under Scottish Book Trust or Scottish BK Trust on Twitter. And you can also add your comments directly to the podcast page at scottishbooktrust.com. And that's all from Book Talk this month. Thanks to my guests, Nicola Belkin. Thank you very much for being on Book Talk today. And thank you, Philippa Cochrane, as well. There'll be a new Scottish Book Trust podcast in 2 weeks' time, featuring interviews, news, and the wonderful hosting of Ryan Van Winkle. Find it at scottishbooktrust.com and iTunes. For Scottish Book Trust, I'm Paul Gallagher. Goodbye. Book Talk is produced by Colin Fraser with music by Sam Gallagher.